What is actually happening in restaurant tech? I'm Kristen Hawley, founder and editor of Expedite, a can't-miss newsletter about restaurant technology and the future of hospitality.
And I'm Brandon Barton, the CEO of Byte. We are the leader in kiosk solutions for the fast casual and quick service industry, and I've been in restaurant tech for, 17 years. This is The Simmer.
We're moving past the headlines and into the real talk, interviewing the smartest people in the business to discover what's powering restaurants now, and most importantly, why you should care. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Nice to see you. I just saw you.
I know. We saw each other in real life. That's fun. That's rare. Well, this is like actually twice in the last couple of weeks, too. This is fun. And you spent the weekend in Vegas after Food on Demand conference for a couple of days.
Well, I didn't go to the conference.
Oh.
They wouldn't let me in.
They don't do press passes?
They didn't do a press pass for me. So I sat in the hallway and I met some people and hung out. And I think they were... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was about. Maybe it was because of that big deal keynote they had, which is what I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. That you saw. Travis Kalanick.
Yeah, so Travis Kalanick, I don't know this to be entirely true, but I think he certainly has to be in the top three of entrepreneurs to ever speak at a tech conference, a restaurant tech conference. Obviously, restaurant tech specifically, obviously tech conference not. And so it was really interesting to hear him speak. The scuttlebutt from everybody that I spoke to, I was there, but what everyone said to me, their impressions of it were that it was a big commercial for Otter. And I understand that perspective. I also thought that he actually gave some insight into the way that he thinks about stuff and not just Otter, but trying to digitize the world. You can't help but respect somebody who built Uber. And he truly did. He, you know, he was like hands dirty building that place. So a lot of brands have said to me the fear of working with them because they also have their own restaurant brands. And so they're giving their own data to their competitors or, you know, they can open up a salad shop whenever they want. And I'm not sure that I've ever really considered that as part of the equation. And it yet makes sense.
I mean, look, like credit where credit is due, but the impetus of Uber was disrupt a legacy industry, right? Like, sorry, I feel a little nervous about trying to apply those principles to another legacy industry that is made of people.
Yes.
But I didn't hear him speak. I did hear that there were some case studies, but the data was all anonymized. So no idea who he was actually talking about. And as a journalist, that's always like,
fair.
Okay. And then, you know, yeah, a big sales pitch. But when you give someone the mic on stage and don't make them answer questions, you know, that's what happens.
Well, I love this about your perspective on these things, because you've said this to me in the past, and now I notice it, where if there is an actual journalist who runs a panel, it goes well. And if there's just an independent who runs a panel, it's a commercial. It makes it completely unuseful.
You want to know how to run a panel? You like throw a grenade and then get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, get everyone into an argument and then just
step back. I like it.
Well, free advice.
Well, meanwhile, when we did catch up in Vegas, the first thing I saw you doing was listening to quarterly earnings calls, which is, you know, your favorite pastime. Who are you listening to and what'd you find out?
Well, I listened to all of them, but the headline, Uber posted a loss, speaking of Uber, and it was not expected. So that was like a little bit of, it was a big surprise. But they also have that big deal with Instacart now.
Yeah.
Uber Eats does, right? So they're going to list their restaurants on the Instacart app. So that kind of synergy and partnership can mean big things for them. What else happened?
You know, the Starbucks traffic being down was a buzz in the event, given that other people in coffee and in juice and in drinks and what everyone said, less addicting beverages than coffee, were worried about that. What was your take on Starbucks's earnings report?
You know, so I listen for the tech stuff mostly. So I'm not the best person to talk about operations, but the thing that's interesting about Starbucks is that they, you know, they have this app, this like order ahead app situation that's wildly popular that has fueled their loyalty program, which is also wildly popular and considered, I would say, like best in class by the kind of people that were at this thing that we were at last week. They're going to open, you have to be a loyalty member to use the app until July, and then they're going to open it up broadly.
Right.
That felt like a big deal to me because it's like, what's going to happen to their loyalty pipeline? Perhaps they feel like they've reached the end of what an exclusive app can do for them. But I know they're also facing some pushback about like the way that they handle payments in it. You know, they make you preload or whatever.
Right.
People are mad about that. So I think that all of those things together contribute to this July announcement. But That was the news for me, is that the app is opening.
Yeah.
For all. Starbucks for everybody.
And then, of course, Howard Schultz lobbing bombs from the sideline.
Yeah. See, always love to see that. Like,
you got to love when a former founder is going to just tell them how to do it. And I'm sure they love it. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody doing something right. Uber Eats got this one right. Partnered with Instacart. Mm-hmm. Everyone would consider, I think, Uber Eats number two, right? Even them, understanding that DoorDash is number one. That's the conceit.
Yeah.
And Instacart is number one when it comes to grocery delivery and you know, maybe getting their some of their market share chipped away by places like Uber Eats and DoorDash. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a huge deal because you know, I love Uber Eats. Don't anybody from Uber Eats listening, love you. But a lot of times I'm like an ex-caviar orderer. So the DoorDash thing always was where my loyalty went. And I love Instacart as well as like a 2-time-a-month Costco buyer because I don't want to ever step foot inside of Costco. It's too much for me. Long story short, I think this is going to disrupt my buying pattern. And I said that to somebody at DoorDash, you know, at the conference, and they shook it off. And I was a little surprised by that. I would be more concerned about this than that person was.
Well, and they're not going to be like, yeah, we're nervous about it. They're going to be like, we're number one, man. Come at us. Bring it on. I don't know.
Yeah, but
we'll see.
The minute that you get complacent is the minute you lose the number one status. And they have to worry about this because there's going to be able to cross promote. That being said, I've also been a part of companies that did cross promotions with other apps and they did not work at all. So, you know, that's not something that always translates. It does sometimes, but it doesn't always. I know for sure that there are more Disney users now that they brought Hulu and Disney together, or Hulu users because of the same. So that was a partnership that probably worked. We don't know the economics of it, but I mean, DoorDash, take note.
Well, you know, Disney Plus has Taylor Swift. So
speaking of somebody nearly as famous as Taylor Swift, we're going to bring in our guest. Taylor Swift was not available. And so we invited Will Gadara onto the pod. Will Gadara is the... In my heart and mind, the best restaurateur of our generation. Not only had he taken 11 Madison Park from a 2-star New York Times restaurant to a 4-star New York Times restaurant, a 3-star Michelin restaurant, and the number one restaurant in the world. He also created some of the greatest concepts outside of that, including, of course, the Nomad brand, which, you know, still speaks volumes and still impacts the industry of design and the design of restaurants. And I feel like even walking into Cafe Carmelini in the past month, I feel nomad in that design. So that was probably over 10 years ago for you. Now has taken his talents over to book writing, is the author of Unreasonable Hospitality, and is also involved with the Bear somehow. Will, so great to have you on the pod.
I'm so excited to be here. And by the way, obviously I was listening in during your guys' conversation, and I judge a podcast that I am going to be a part of based on how quickly they get the word scuttlebutt into the conversation. And you did it with remarkable efficiency, and it makes me that much happier to be here. So thank you.
There's always scuttlebutt. It's just a nice way to say rumors, I think. So, Will, why don't we start in a familiar place for you? For those of you that don't know, you are now traveling around the country talking about Unreasonable Hospitality. I got to see you speak. You know, we're friends. We talk all the time. I got to see you speak and do your speech at Mertech this year, which was really cool. So you were at a tech conference. Why don't you talk a little bit about like this experience of being a best-selling author, you know, doing these talks and kind of what it means to you and kind of where it goes from here. Are you going to be on the speaking tour for the rest of your life?
You know, it's interesting. I think one of the reasons why, and listen, I fell in love with restaurants in the beginning because I like just throwing a party every night. I love the idea of leading a team and collectively every single night, you get to literally throw a party for a bunch of strangers and in doing so make a lot of people super happy and hopefully leave them with a bunch of memories along the way. But over time, as I got deeper into like really pursuing hospitality at a pretty high level, I realized that it's much more than serving a meal. It's much more than throwing a party. Like, you can really impact people. I talk all the time about how we all individually need to name for ourselves why the work we're doing matters, because I don't care how much you like your job, sometimes work sucks. And if you don't know that the work you're doing impacts people in some significant way, it's really hard to bring your most fully realized self to the work on the more challenging days. And I think there's a ton of impact you can make through restaurants. I think you can help people celebrate, give them the grace to forget, or just make the world a nicer place by being really freaking nice to people. And I mean, when I sold the company, gosh, we had 1,800 employees. We were serving a lot of people in a lot of different places every single night. But that's a lot of people that you have the ability to impact. What's been so fun for me about the book itself and going around talking about it is the impact that I can have is so much bigger. Not just the number of people reading the book or the number of people I'm speaking to, but like the scalable impact. That if I can, even in the smallest of ways, inspire people to be just a little bit more thoughtful, creative, and intentional in pursuit of hospitality, regardless of what they do for a living, the number of people that some of these companies serve and therefore can serve more graciously or more thoughtfully is pretty cool. And so, I mean, yeah, I've been at tech conferences and finance conferences. I've spoken to insurance companies and NFL teams and lawn care companies and like literally everything in between, which in a pretty significant way gives me hope for the world that all of these different people across disciplines think hospitality matters enough to invite me to go talk to them.
Sure.
So yeah, it's been wild. It's been really cool. And I'm enjoying the season in terms of where it goes from here. And gosh, for like 20 years of my life, every single thing I did, big and small, was focused with a kind of crazy conviction on achieving a set of goals that I laid out for myself a long time ago. And that is in many ways the reason I was so successful at it. But I'm kind of giving myself the grace right now to just play a little bit and just try on different things to see what I feel like can feel important and simultaneously bring me joy. So I'm working on new books and I'm speaking and we do a little bit of consulting and yeah, I'm producing The Bear and
Casual,
a whole bunch of stuff like that.
Casual.
But because here's the thing with me, I am maniacal when I like fully dig into one thing, and in that it doesn't really leave much margin to experiment with other things. And so I don't want to stop doing all the different things. And so I'm just allowing myself to like this is my wanderlust season. Mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying it.
That's so poetic. That's so nice. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, you have this newsletter. So I don't know if you know, I write a newsletter. I do mine twice a week and I'm a journalist. It's a different situation. But
just a little bit of a humble flex. Did you hear that? Is she? It's like, I also have one. I do it four times as often as you do yours. But
we just talked about selling an 18-person company, so, yeah. Or 1,800-person company.
Sure.
Anyway, I wanted to say before I forget that the one that you sent out last week, which was about shampoo bottles in hotel rooms, you should stay at your own hotel. It made me laugh so hard because as someone who writes a newsletter, I know sometimes you really need ideas, right? And like, you're like, what am I going to do? And I could just picture you just like in a rage, like in your travels, just being like, why is this fucking shampoo bottle not in the, like, I'm going to write a newsletter about the send. But is that true? Is that how that stuff comes to you? Or are you just like so attuned to those like tiny little bits of what you would call unreasonable hospitality that you're just like have a notebook in your pocket and you write them down?
A little bit of both. So one of the things I love to encourage in people is this idea that creativity is a practice, like anything. I think far too many people operate under the false assumption that like ideas just come to creative people. I don't think that's how it works. I think you figure out what is your personal practice, not dissimilar to how if you want to get in shape, you decide to work out this many days a week and you decide to follow this diet and whatever it is, or if you want to start a practice of meditation, you commit to doing it in a certain way. The newsletter is called Premeal, which I just think is the most important 30 minutes of the day in a well-run restaurant. And the extent to which a leader takes that meeting seriously, I think the impact that has on a culture is asymmetric in terms of how much time you invest and the impact that it can have on the culture as a whole. And one of the biggest things that I believe about a well-run premium is that it should not just be about the what, like this is the new dish, this is a new wine by the glass, this is a new policy or whatever. It's about like sharing moments of inspiration from out in the world. My dad, growing up, he'd always say, "Will, keep your eyes peeled," which was his way of saying, if you are focused and open to it, there's inspiration all around you. And so the things I write in these newsletters, they're exactly what I would be saying in my pre-meals, because I think that the best way to get ideas to stick with the team are to enrobe them in stories and pull little threads that people can relate to, and then take those threads and bring them home and tie them into a lesson that's applicable to the work you're doing. And so for years, and I mean for like years and years and years since the iPhone first had a notes app, I've had a pre-meal thing in there long before I wrote the newsletter, which is just when I see something out in the world, I'm like, that's a pre-meal. I want to bring that home and talk about it. And so the newsletter is just my way of not letting that practice end, in spite of the fact that I don't have a team to deliver a pre-meal to. Now, that said, I'm also working on a bunch of other stuff. And so like when you focused on too many things, sometimes you can fall off one practice as you fall onto another one. And so, yeah, there have definitely been times where I'm like, oh no, I have another newsletter to write. And then the practice for me becomes different, which is I'm going to spend the next hour sitting here being fully focused and thinking about this one thing. I think the shampoo in the hotel bathroom was part of the former practice, where I've been staying in so many hotels and that one little thing drives me crazy. Not just because of like in my own personal pet peeve, but because of the thoughtlessness that it represents on behalf of the people running those hotels.
Brandon, do you know what we're talking about?
Did you read this? No, of course. Okay, course. I mean, I think it's great. It's like if Will was a comedian, this would all just be a Seinfeld bit. It's like Will's observations in the world turned funny versus Will's observations in the world turn into hospitality lessons. You know, he had one for me at Mertek where he saw everybody was hanging out at the bar and was like, it'd be really great if everyone just walked in. It was somebody walked in with a bunch of In-N-Out for these people. And he's like, you should do that. You should put bite stickers on it. And, you know, everyone would take a meeting with you if you showed up with In-N-Out to a bunch of drunk people. That's morphed into its own Brandon way, into the fun thing that I'm trying to do at conferences where I'm bringing old wine to the conference and just sharing it with anybody who's there and who wants, telling as many people as possible to be my own little unreasonable hospitality thing. And whether or not it brings business, it's not important. It matters that Byte cares about hospitality. Look at me doing a little commercial too. Why not? But no, but it's true. And so you've impacted me in the way that I'm thinking about how we operate as a company, just on the little things that you have, your little observations.
I appreciate that, man.
Well, it also impacted me because I was the recipient of two of those magnums on Thursday night, and woo, man, I didn't want to leave any behind, and
well,
it was great.
Well,
yeah,
if we're talking fine wine for a second, I mean,
okay,
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I was at a restaurant recently, and I just said, man, this is not run the way that Will would run it. And like, all I want in the future, not a guarantee, but I want in the future you to run some other food and beverage establishment. At some point, I think this needs to happen. You don't have, I will invest in it. Not that you need it, but my God, you know, maybe this impact of helping restaurateurs run better restaurants and, you know, learn unreasonable hospitality at a high level is going to get us there. But I want more Will Guidara run restaurants in the world. It's like if a band broke up and they don't produce music anymore, there will be a comeback tour, right?
Listen, I can't imagine that I don't open a restaurant again. It's too much a part of what I love and what I love doing. But the metaphor I've been using is, okay, if human beings had like a 200-year lifespan, for people who choose to have kids, you'd probably have kids, raise them, send them off to college, and then you still have like another 150 years at least on the planet. So you're probably going to do it all over again. But you're going to give yourself a reasonable amount of time in between sending your first batch of kids off to school and having another one. And so listen, it's in my blood. It is literally the thing that I love most in the world. Not just crafting an experience, the big things and the little things about that experience, because I care about both equally. But more than that, it's about like putting together an awesome group of people and getting aligned on the spirit of our collective endeavor and then working every single day to try to be as good as we can possibly be at that thing. I miss it for sure. I'm just not ready to do it again yet.
Yeah, no pressure, no pressure. Just making sure that at some point in the future, this is going to happen.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about as a content person is the Welcome Conference, because I finally got to go for the first time this past year. And I just, you know, this is not a flex, but I put together one time a restaurant industry conference of my own. It was very different. It was not the same. But I would love to know, like, how are you thinking about the overall message and then curating the people who appear? Because many of them are restaurant people, but many of them aren't.
Yeah.
How are you pulling from all these different universes to craft one message that is, I would say, at least in the one time I went, like very, very strong and resonant?
Oh, thank you. I mean, Welcome is kind of done in the same way. It's interesting. There was a minute where we almost started growing Welcome, and we're going to have a bunch more of them over the course of the year across the country. And I ended up retreating from that idea because curating that many different conferences would start to feel forced as opposed to what it currently feels like, which is very organic. Mm-hmm. Basically, the day after Welcome, I just start to look at the people I meet in life and always have in the back of my head, would this person be awesome on that stage? Mm-hmm. And most of the people that speak are just people that I've organically met and become either close with, or people I've discovered and kind of grown to really respect from afar.
Yeah.
For a long time, we had themes. One year it was being present. One year it was conflict and change. One year it was being right. But eventually I kind of realized that the themes made the day a little more boring. It started to get a little repetitive, like being present, for example. No one took the stage, to your point before about the best way to run a panel is to throw a bomb and then walk away. No one went up there and said, guys, I don't think we should be present in hospitality, right? And so what it's evolved to is like things that I think are inspiring, and that as a team, we collectively think that the industry could benefit from hearing about right now. And so it's become kind of freeing in that way.
Yeah.
It kind of represents a little bit of kind of how I would encourage most people to start thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is to stop feeling like you need to fit inside of a box. And if you are creating something, it will always succeed so much more if you feel a genuine connection to the message you're trying to deliver, right? And if there's too many rules, you have to like kind of force things a little bit. And so the less prescriptive the day was, the more impactful it became. And so we've really leaned into that.
It probably makes sense now that you're, you know, like you said, speaking to lawnmower companies or all these other things, your message can resonate to them. It makes sense that other messages resonate to what I would like to think as our audience of hospitalitarians and restaurateurs, right? I thought the former CEO of Boeing was one of the most impactful. I actually went back and looked it up recently because we did a company offsite, and the simplicity in his leadership was so powerful. And of course, I'm forgetting his name. You know it probably. Alan Mulally. And just to think about that message to that audience on how to run a team, that's just general business practices. Anybody that you think that you can tell us about is going to be there, you should also, you know, might as well tell the dates and how to get tickets and all that.
It'll be in September again. I think we're announcing everything in a couple of weeks, but I can say it here. September 16th will be the conference. Tickets go on sale in June.
Okay.
I don't know when.
They sell out in minutes. So if anybody listening wants a ticket, you should get them quickly.
Yeah, if you want to get a ticket, go on to thewelcomeconference.com and put your name on the list, and then you'll always kind of know quickly.
Yeah.
Well, you're given a heads up when they're going to go on. Let's see, this year, I'll get in trouble if I actually start saying names because there's a team of us, and, like, there's a whole build up here. But like, well, I'll tell you the Alan Mulally one real quick. Like, just to give you a sense, back to you, Kristen, like, how do these things come to be? So Alan Mulally, Christina and I went to, this was years ago, we went to a wedding, Christina, my wife, Christina. And I went to a wedding in Florence, and we decided to just stay in Europe for a little bit. And so we rented a convertible and we drove through France to London for a couple of days. And like, it was this romantic getaway. And what Christina and I do apparently during romantic getaways is we listen to books on tape about former CEOs. And so somehow we ended up listening to the book on tape of, I guess, the audiobook is what you'd call it now, Alan Mulally. And the book is called American Icon. And Gosh, I mean, this guy is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And if anyone is looking for a good audiobook, just listen to that one. It's remarkable. And so then I got home and I never want to cold call like the welcome conference, especially for the speakers. It's this really connective thing. And so I can't meet you for the first time when you come to speak. We have to have been building a relationship leading up to that.
Sure.
But so I just started talking to everyone I knew, like, does anyone know Alan Mulally? And then eventually one of my very good friends turns out was on the board of Ford. And so he set us up and we started getting to know each other. And that's what led to him being a part of it. I guess the one I'll say, I was talking to a friend of mine who's an amazing musician. And he was sharing with me the story of how he started playing music. And then how he went from a solo artist to part of him and a buddy of him playing music together. And the effect that had on the creative capacity of the two of them. And how they then added another person to their group. And this whole idea of like creativity through collaboration. And I was like, do you want to speak at welcome? And so there's going to be one with this guy, and we'll announce it soon, but that I think is going to be so freaking cool, where we show, this is the thing, I believe that the lessons you learn from some parts of life can always be so clearly applied in other parts of life, and that so many of us, regardless of what we're selling people, whether it's music or meals, we're in the hospitality business if we choose to look at it in that way. So
yeah,
we're going to learn about like collaboration and creativity from a musician. That'll be one of the talks this year.
I love it. I know I'm pretty psyched because all the speaking that you've done is opening this welcome conference up to more than just restaurateurs. There's going to be a ton of different type of people there this year, I'd hope, than in years past. Not that it's not just for a restaurateur audience, but I know that even in the segment that we talk to most, which is the quick service and fast casual world, they now know who you are. And they may not have known that 5 years ago, 6 years ago, because they don't know what the Pellegrino list is, right? For example.
Yeah.
So I'm psyched about that. I'm hoping that we're going to get a bunch of people from the QSR and fast casual industry going to the show. And I'm going to definitely try to grab a bunch of tickets and invite people to come along.
You know, what's been fun for me is over the last year, I mean, I've spent time with a bunch of these QSR companies.
Yep.
And hearing either about cultures that have been focused on hospitality for a very long time, or spending time with cultures that are really looking to turn their focus towards it right now, I think it's pretty uplifting, because I think for a long time we were kind of guided by this false idea that hospitality was something you could only achieve when you had so much time with someone to express it, that it was a waste in a fast food environment because the whole thing happened so quickly. But at the end of the day, we get to be intentional in pursuit of relationships, whether we're investing in those relationships for a couple of minutes or a couple of hours. And yeah, it looks very different between fine dining and fast food or fine casual or whatever the names are these days. But it's simply making a choice that you care enough about it that you are willing to invest the time, energy, and resources to succeed at it. And I've been kind of overwhelmed by how many brands are making that choice right now.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see how it manifests out into the world.
I mean, I'm a tech reporter. I'm a tech journalist, right? And like the thing that I love to report on is the friction between hospitality and technology, because the tech business traditionally is like working towards optimizing, fixing, like reinventing, disrupting, all of these things that are like at odds with hospitality. And then when you put restaurants and technology together, which is my specialty, like all of this crazy stuff comes out, because it's like, well, no, we can fix this problem. And then you have restaurants saying, well, that's not actually a problem. You know, that's just like how we are. And I don't know, do you talk to tech companies? Have you talked to tech companies?
A couple of times, yeah.
Are they receptive? Yeah, you should do more of that.
Tech companies. I mean, listen, I believe that tech, when used thoughtfully, enhances hospitality.
Yeah.
Like the story that I like to use is from my own experiences. Back in the day, we were on OpenTable, 11 Madison Park, a long, long, long time ago. But I blocked every single slot so that you could not book a reservation online. You had to call the restaurant to make a reservation, because that was very important to me. That's what hospitality meant, right? Like the sound of a human voice and all of that. And then Uber you guys were talking about Travis before Uber started to become a thing, and I started getting into Uber. I loved it. But then, like, I forget when it was, 6 months after Uber came around, there was this like 3, 4, 5 month period where every time the driver got to wherever you were, they'd call you immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it annoyed me. Because invariably, I was finishing up a meeting or a meal or something, and I was timing it in exactly the right way. And then I had to stop talking to the person I was trying to be present with to pick up the phone and say, I know, I'm looking at my phone, I see you're outside, I'll be right there. And it was the first time in my life that it started to occur to me that a human voice is not always hospitable. That realization compelled me to actually go back and reverse the entire reservation process. Because with the first set of eyes, what I realized I was asking people to do was call exactly at 9 a.m. when reservations went live, to wait on hold for 35 minutes, only for someone to eventually pick up the phone and say, I'm sorry, we are fully reserved at this point. Can I put your name on a wait list? And no matter how many reservationists we added to the team, we couldn't fix that because of just the sheer number of calls that were coming in every day at 9 a.m. Instead, we made them all online. You can go online at 9 and immediately see, like, am I going to get a reservation or not? And if not, here's the wait list. But I kept all the reservationists on staff and instead used them to like supercharge our confirmation calls such that they were no longer about confirming the reservation, but about learning everything we needed to know such that we can make the meal that much more special. And the bottom line is, like, in your guys' opening, you talked about reinventing an industry, and you're like, but I hate that being talked about when it's an industry so much about people. Mm-hmm. You're right. And yet, our model is broken. There's no world where the consumer is going to pay enough that restaurants will be able to afford to pay their team enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so something's got to change, right? And I spent time with one company. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to say which one, but we went through all of their systems to try to remove 25% of the people they needed on the floor such that they could spread those salaries amongst the 75% that still remained. The idea being that, okay, in some cases, actually digitizing the experience makes it more hospitable. And if doing that also gives you the ability to afford to pay the people you need on the team a more appropriate living wage, that will not only make sure that they feel better taken care of, but the hospitality will get better. And so I feel like I used to be the person that said hospitality and technology are not friends. I'm increasingly of the belief that when treated thoughtfully, they can be best friends. Like the simplest example for me is like when I'm in Prague or something and I'm at the airport and I'm just starving. And so I go to a McDonald's. They don't understand what I'm saying. I don't understand what they're saying, but that kiosk works perfectly in English.
You'd think that I asked him to say this. I didn't.
No. No, but I'm saying, like, it really is true. Like that's a beautiful expression. And if that means that they need half the number of cashiers and they can pay the other half a little bit more money such that everything improves, that's a beautiful thing. Now, next appropriate comment is, yeah, but so many people are driven by profit, not people. Are they actually going to reinvest any of that in their people? Well, it's the beautiful part about like the competitive market. If some people start to do it, other people are going to have to adjust in some way in order to stay in the game. Mm-hmm.
The truth is that a lot of these, I think you were getting towards a point that I see, which is a lot of restaurants would not be able to afford to run with 1980s hospitality today, full stop. And in some ways, that's a good thing. I think the wage of the hospitality industry has gone up, which is good for the individuals in it. And if we want to make sure that those businesses survive, there are parts of the experience that we need to adjust to become, like you said, more hospitable, even if that's in a digital direction. By the way, Will, I'm so proud of you. I think it's taken me 15 years for you to understand the digital could be hospitable, you know, equation there.
wait, Kristen, am I speaking too naively? Do you have a counter to what I just said?
I would say that I heard the same thing from Danny Meyer 5 years ago. Like, I would say, like, I'm curious, like, the digital technology can be hospitable. And I think that that's actually generally accepted on, like, at, like, a high level on operators who are, like, really focusing on hospitality. So, no, I don't necessarily have a pushback. It's more like, what does that look like in the year 2024 and 2025? And like when the reality of an operation is like how we're talking about, it's so expensive and it's challenging and the model isn't really working. Like, and then you have these tech companies that are all about margins and they're sort of taking advantage of every little slice of the pie that they can get. You know, like every time I think that like another third party can't come in and like take like a tiny sliver of some sort of relationship between a restaurant and a person, somebody does. Every time, like, God, you know, like we're selling reservations now, or we're selling the ability to sell reservations, or we're buying the corner table or whatever it is. And it's, so it's, I'm wondering like just how it evolves. And I'm interested in, and you don't have to answer this, this is just like a big question of my work. Like, how does it continue to evolve in a way that works for both businesses because they have, they still unfortunately have such different motivations, right, to work. So.
Both businesses in terms of the restaurants and the outside vendors.
And the tech, yeah. And the tech companies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting though, like all the ones that you just mentioned, which I'm 100% on board with you, are all just ways to build revenue. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's people from the outside helping you build your revenue incrementally through mm-hmm. either delivery or reselling or this or mm-hmm. that. The areas I'm more drawn to are how do you lower expenses? I think like you look at food cost or cost of goods sold, which generally, you know, are responsible for whatever, 30-35% of your revenue. You shave a few points off that by using some of the tech that's come out that helps us manage our cost of goods sold is remarkable.
Yeah.
And so let's say you're kind of drowning and you need a few more points just to stay afloat. Great. Let's say you're doing really well and you're just trying to save money somewhere such that you can reinvest in the experience somewhere else. There's no friction there. There's no trade-off. Mm-hmm. I think of technology not dissimilarly to how I think about like bulk purchasing. I wrote about this in the book, like with USHG, as we got bigger, every single restaurant was so fiercely independent and no chef ever wanted to play like ball with the others. And listen, when it comes to who you're buying your meat from, I get it. Like chefs have certain relationships with certain farmers and they want to make sure that they're getting that exact cut from that exact person. There's zero reason whatsoever that we shouldn't be doing some bulk purchasing agreement with Ecolab, right? The things mm-hmm. that aren't emotional, save everything you can on those things such that you can invest more liberally into the things that are emotional. I also think most of the things that increase revenue through these other partners are just freaking ridiculous. Actually, not hospitable at all. Like the reselling of tables and like all this stuff. It's like, as you're just shifting the value proposition in such a way where if someone spent X number of dollars for that experience, regardless who got the money, they're still holding the restaurant accountable to that value exchange. And I think it comes to a point where you can no longer live up to it. We never did that ever.
Mm-hmm. They're also saying that generally the restaurant's giving such a good experience that they're leaving money on the table, that there's a place that they can charge just to get in it, right? And so a restaurant is trying to give as good of an experience as possible, whether that's a worth $200 more, $300 more, or whatever.
And by the way, but that's the thing, like at least control your own fate. If you believe that a four top on a Saturday night is worth more than an early two top on a Tuesday, then just switch on dynamic pricing on one of the reservations platforms and keep the money for yourself. Don't give it away to someone else. Like, we get to make these decisions ourselves. We don't need to let other people come in and take it away.
Yeah, we'll have Matt Tucker of Talk. That sounded like a Talk shout out. Matt Tucker of Talk on here in a few weeks. So we'll definitely ask him about it. Here, Will, let's leave you on this. You think about guests so often. I loved one thing that you said at just the last segment here, where you said guests are never going to pay what it actually costs to have a great meal and put on the great show, to put on the great party that you've talked about. And I agree with this. And it's actually something that I struggle with. You understand people. You certainly understand people that go to restaurants. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it is that consumers are not willing to adjust? And by the way, I'm the same way. I saw a $50 entree yesterday at a neighborhood restaurant, and it was just like, oh man, why do you think that is? Like, what do we have to do here? Because at some point, we're going to have to take price. The industry is going to have to raise the prices to a place that, you know, allows the agriculture industry to not be subsidized by, you know, corn subsidies the entire time and raise animals more healthy and do all these other things. I don't want to get into that, but like, how do we make consumers understand that the price is higher than what they pay?
I should never be so like convicted. Who knows? Maybe they will one day. I think change takes a long time and behaviors are slow to evolve, especially when at the end of the day, there are a lot of big chains that are never going to be buying all the ingredients we're talking about buying, and they're never going to actually start paying their people the amount that they should pay people.
Sure.
As long as meals are available for that price over here, it's going to really be hard for people to wrap their head around why they should be available for this price over there. I mean, like, one of the things that I'm seeing these memes on Instagram all the time, and, you know, there's like this whole frustration when you like go to whatever, a fast food restaurant or a coffee shop, and they turn it around and they ask you to tip. And
yeah,
by the way, it is getting a little insane. I went one place the other day, and you know, they give you the pre-selected options, and it was 28%, 30%, and 32%. I'm like, are you out of your freaking mind? Like, these are my options. And so now my new, I mean, that's insane. Like, guys, stop. But people get really upset. And I'm always intrigued. I try not to read social media comments, but those ones I always read for obvious reasons. And the response is almost consistently, these greedy restaurant owners should just pay their teams a living wage and stop trying to like pass off the expense to the customer. And if I was the kind of person that would ever comment on someone else's post, I would be inclined to write like, well, no, it would just mean the price would go up.
Right.
And you'd be frustrated by that too. I don't think any change is going to happen soon, man. I mean, like, you think about it, we're in a season far beyond restaurants where I think a lot of people are just really struggling to get by generally.
Sure.
If your business is able to stay afloat right now, are you going to take the risk of raising prices and alienating the customers you have? I mean, Five Guys get such a hard time because of what they charge. And it feels like that's one of the fast food restaurants that for a long time was charging what the food actually costs to make.
Yeah.
And it's kind of part of their brand now. They're the expensive one. So I don't know. I don't know what needs to happen. That's like a whole socioeconomic, psychological question. I mean, that's not where I thrive. But gosh, I hope one day it does, because there's a brokenness to it. And until that changes, I don't think our industry can ever sustainably thrive.
Bam. Powerful, man. As said earlier, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate all your words always. I find talking to you inspirational, dude. You always have some good nuggets.
Likewise.
Aw.
And by the way, can I just celebrate the early show banter? There's a thing. You guys have a thing here. It was nice to listen to, and I'm excited to see where you take this.
So. Oh, thank you.
Well, we'll have you back on in season two next year when we talk about something else, and you have your restaurant open. Actually, no, you can't.
Next year.
You can't come on until you have a restaurant. No, I know it's not next year. I just miss Wilgadera hospitality in the flesh. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's nice to say. That's nice to say. Yeah, thank you. Truly. When I read your book, I was like, oh, this is going to be another workbook for me, you know, like restaurant stuff. And it wasn't. It was inspirational in a way I didn't expect as a creative. And I appreciate that. So
thank you for saying that. Mm-hmm.
All right. So everyone sign up for the Welcome Conference email so you get it. And then you can come see Will speak live in September. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks for listening. For info on these trends and more, sign up to receive my newsletter at expedite.news.
And if you love the podcast, rate and review wherever you're listening. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much.